Blog Talk Radio.
We are not alone. And a very, very good evening, a sort of a pre-autumnal evening, if you will, to all of our wonderful listeners out there. And this is, of course, another episode of Contact. And once again, we are here to explore all things ufology related and related subject matter with the help of expert guests from the milieus of science, spirituality, multiple disciplines, authors, all etc., etc., etc. So we're very, very pleased that you have phoned in with us this evening, and we have a very exciting guest for you. And it's first of all, what's wrong with me? I've got to say hello to my co-host, Wes Roberts. Wes, how are you?
Leslie, I'm good. It's okay. I was letting you go on the roll here, and I could have just sat back and listened to you. I am perfect, and we're really excited about today's guest.
Absolutely. That wasn't a narcissistic moment, by the way. I was just on a focus there, thinking about our guest. Our guest this evening is Reverend John Polk. And Reverend John Polk is not only a lifelong experiencer, but he is an international metaphysical minister. He's a co-host of AquarianRadio.com, a Reiki master and teacher, a channel, a medium, a telekinesis practitioner. He's also the founder of Wolf Spirit Ministries, and he is the consultant or a consultant for Dr. Edgar Mitchell's FREE, which is the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. And so all of these things are on their own are so fascinating and so magnificent, and I'm honored to have John here because I have also just recently become authorized as a regressionist practitioner through the FREE organization. So we're very, very happy to have Reverend John with us, and we're also going to have Reynero Hernandez. He'll be joining us. Ray Hernandez will be joining us, who is also one of the organizers and founders of the FREE organization. Now this evening, and I should mention for our listeners out there, we are pre-recording this show, so this evening we will not be able to take listener calls and the chat room will not be open, but we are very happy to welcome Reverend John Polk, who is celebrating the release of his second book, which is called Yahweh, the Biblical God is an Alien. And so we are going to be talking about the book and everything else John Polk related. So without further ado, I am going to say good evening. Good evening, Reverend John. How are you?
I'm smashing good. Thank you for inquiring.
And how are things down in Florida this evening in Orlando? Are you having some lovely weather, or is it a little humido, or what's doing?
It's hurricane season here in Orlando, really all throughout Florida, so it's either incredibly hot and humid or storming with lightning. It's a crazy time here in Florida, but, you know, it's part of the cycle of the southeastern United States, and I wouldn't want to live anywhere else.
Yes, indeed. I can absolutely see that. And certainly, you know, I've always thought that maybe some of these geophysical issues that you go through in Florida, and my husband and I used to have a place there, but has a lot to do with the not only the Florida being really, and the Bimini Islands and Cuba and Puerto Rico being some of the last visible land masses of the Atlantean continent. And depending on how you feel about what happened to our forebears of Atlantis, there may in fact be large crystals very close to where you are located that in fact have some type of effect on weather or the geophysical situation.
I agree totally. You can feel the resonant energy emanating from the Atlantic. Plus, I'm about maybe 2 hours from the triangulated point of the Bermuda Triangle, which hits right around Fort Lauderdale, and then goes to Bimini in the Bahamas, goes out into the Sargasso Sea in the middle of the Atlantic, which is unusually calm waters, and then the waters all around it are incredibly dangerous and turbulent. And then right off of the coast of Puerto Rico, within that triangle that touches Puerto Rico, is the second largest trench on Earth. And then if you dig a hole directly through to the other side of the Earth, you end up in the Devil's Triangle or the Dragon's Triangle off the coast of Japan, which is even more violent and turbulent And that's the biggest trench in the world. Mm-hmm. And I was talking on a radio show recently where, as human beings, if we had a vehicle that could withstand the pressure, which we don't, but if we did, if we knew how to traverse our body, mind, spirit, and traverse the vehicle's spirit also, we could go right through the molten lava core of our Earth and pop up on the other side of the Earth right there by Japan. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you can't do that, the pressure will implode your vehicle, or you would just end up going up into a bunch of rocks, into just a dead end. Mm-hmm. But yes, you can feel the mystical energy. Christopher Columbus reported sightings not far from where I live also on his way to the New World.
He most certainly did, something that very few people are aware of. And in fact, you know, further to what you were just saying, you know, the Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, spoke a lot about the last days of Atlantis and talked about how the Atlanteans were attempting to use crystal technology to penetrate the center of the Earth and either send themselves etherically, or Edgar Cayce said they were involved in some warlike activities with the civilization that was then on the other side of the world, which may have even been part of Lemuria, I'm not sure, the Pacific continent certainly. So you're in a mystical place. And speaking of mysticism, if you don't mind, John, I would just like to read very briefly from the foreword to your new book, Yahweh, the Biblical God is an Alien, so our listeners out there will have a really good idea of what you're about and why you've written this book and where the info is coming from. So just bear with me for just a second. This is the foreword from Yahweh, the Biblical God is an Alien by Reverend John Polk. And he writes, just by reading the alien oracle scrolls, you are connecting with my spirit. But that's only the beginning. Allow your higher self to commune with other spirits, souls, ghosts, gods, angels, and aliens. If you can traverse your mind deep enough within your past lives, subconscious, consciousness, the bridge should be easy to navigate. And I profess that a significant portion of your journey will recount actual channelings that I have received. As I am a medium, I live in multiple worlds simultaneously. I am a human sharing this planet Earth with all of you, and at the same time, I'm traveling as a non-physical conscious mind energy on the astral plane. It is within this domain that I come in contact and openly communicate with aliens, ultra-terrestrials, angels, gods, ghosts, souls, spirits, and the real God. Traveling further down the rabbit hole, the messages I receive tie together these supernatural interactions, and the balance of my writing is me finishing the thoughts and editing the pages. And that being said, I am editing my book myself, and I am not an editor. I am an abductee, experiencer, and contactee who has so much material through real-life encounters that I had to share my downloads and stories with the world. And we'll take a pause right there. Reverend John, so tell us a little bit about the new book. And I have to say that many of our listeners will be in complete agreement that certainly Yahweh or Enlil is an ancient alien whose doings have been partially recorded in the holy books of all three major religions. And tell me about your relationship and your interest in Yahweh and exploring what he did, both in the biblical times and in contemporary times.
Okay, brilliant question. Yahweh first came to me incognito in disguise as Enoch, who also is Metatron, one of the archangels, or what I like to term as the archaliens. And I started to receive information, downloads, that was very, very much different from the mainstream exopolitical ufologist kind of perspective. And most of mine dealt with ancient aliens and the past and seeding of the planet and colonization. And so I was receiving all this information for a number of years before I realized that Enoch was in fact Yahweh. And then a couple years removed after receiving from Yahweh, I realized that Yahweh was Enlil. And it took me a number of years to figure it all out. And I started to ask, you know, Yahweh, why did you disguise yourself as Enoch? And then I started to ask Enlil, why did you disguise yourself as Yahweh? Why don't you just come clean in the first place? And he basically said is that your soul was not ascended enough to assimilate the information and be able to properly digest it, that you were still an infant in many ways, even though you were wise like the universe, but you just weren't spiritually mature enough. And at first I didn't get it, but now it makes complete and total sense to me. Mm-hmm. That this is a maturation process. As evolved as we are, or that we think that we are still very much infants in the eyes of the universal God consciousness, and that he only hands us what we're able to handle. And so that's why it takes a long time, and our spiritual soul maturation takes an entire lifetime, if not many lifetimes, before we can actually become one with God and the universe. Mm-hmm. So it's still a process. So as evolved as I know I am, I have to temper my cockiness with a little humility and understand that I'm still an infant and I can learn from everybody. I can learn from somebody who's just starting to get their feet wet in our field. And of course, I can always learn from the ascended masters that I met, for example, at the Experiencers Speak 4 conference in Portland, Maine last weekend. So it's a learning process for life. I embrace it and I enjoy it. But getting back to my book, colonization of the planet had been going on for 450,000 years or more. Actually, Michael Cremo, who wrote Forbidden Archaeology, found an artifact that was 2.8 billion years old.
Yes, he told us about that when he was a guest on the last show. He discussed that a bit.
2.8 billion years old, and it was found in North America also.
Yes.
So how old is the human creation story? Is it 10, 20,000 years old, a few hundred thousand years old? No, it's billions and billions of years old, which as humans, it's hard to comprehend the concept of even a billion years, since we represent, you know, even a millionth of a hair on the timeline scale of this blue planet we call Earth. But Yahweh, as part of the Anunnaki, Enlil, colonized the pretty much the whole Earth at one point, and then they pulled out and went to other stars throughout our solar system, throughout Andromeda, throughout the entire multiverse. But what he did on this particular epoch is he seeded our planet and he planted religion, a couple different religions. And in my opinion, he seeded us with Judeo-Christian and Islam, and they're all Abrahamic in origin.
Yes, indeed.
And they all feature the same archaliens, Raphael, Michael, and Gabriel, and even Enoch also.
Yes.
And they all cross-pollinated across these religions. Now, why? Question why? Well, Temple Mount in Jerusalem is a location of religious pilgrimage to these three religions. So if you think about it, why on earth would Jews, Christians, and Muslims revere this location as a holy place, all in the same area? Well, many reasons. I mean, at first it was built as a landing pad for the aliens, just like Baalbek, like the Trilithon in Baalbek, Lebanon.
Yes.
They were landing pads for the aliens. And so our prophets, Jesus chased off the moneylenders at Temple Mount. Abraham prepared to sacrifice his son Isaac at Temple Mount. Muhammad descended to heaven from Temple Mount. Mm-hmm. These are all reasons why these three religions now revere this as a holy location for all three religions, but it still doesn't make sense that they're constantly at war with each other and at odds with each other, and the religions don't cross-pollinate. But the reason I believe that he seeded these three religions was to create a divine trinity within himself and within us. So by seeding our planet with these three religions, he received prayer energy from all of us. So we pray at these sacred locations. The prayer energy from these sacred locations on geodetic markers around the earth harness upwellings of earth energy through our earth grid.
Mm-hmm.
It magnifies the energy, it goes up into the heavens, and Yahweh and other creator god aliens receive this energy, and it builds their God self or soul exponentially to make them more powerful. And then when we die, since we've prayed to them our whole life, we've given our soul to these religions and to these creator God aliens who we thought were deities, they actually receive our soul as it ascends on its way to the real universal God's consciousness. It actually goes through a version of their heaven on the way to the real universal God light and gives them even more energy. So now let's extrapolate that. Imagine that Yahweh has done this, of course, on Earth. He did it on Mars in the past. He did it on multiple stars in the Milky Way. Did it on multiple stars in Andromeda, our neighboring galaxy, and did it throughout the entire multiverse. So how much prayer energy and how many souls is Yahweh or Enlil receiving to boost his energy spiritually and within the universal God consciousness? How much energy and how much power is he gaining from primitive beings like human beings on Earth and then other beings, not just human, all around the multiverse? So let's say that Enlil has perhaps a few thousand or more planets, and he's receiving prayer energy and souls from all of these planets all at the same time. How much power can you gain from that? And then I had this download one time where the Creator God aliens are almost in a competition with one another to see who has the most prayer energy and souls from the most planets around the multiverse. But what's happening now is where this made Enlil, Yahweh, stronger, now it's making him weak. And the reason is because he's having to acquire all this energy from primitive beings like humans to make him more powerful through deception. And that's making his God self or soul weak. So the higher gods reign from the heavens, and the lesser gods, they rule the planets. So he wants to be one of the higher gods who tells the lesser gods who rules the planets. He's trying to make that evolutionary jump upward towards the universal God consciousness. And he needs to wean himself off of us, and we need to wean ourselves off of him and the deception that he has, you know, taken us through since the beginning of religion. And that's kind of a he's teeter-tottering on the fulcrum right now. He's trying to ascend upward. He's trying to wean himself off of us. We need to wean ourselves off of him and realize that all of these Creator God aliens that call themselves gods are in fact extraterrestrials. And I think that's a big part of disclosure. And when disclosure finally happens, we will realize that we were deceived this whole time. But believe it or not, just so we deify them and worship them and pray to them and love them, for the most part, they were benevolent to us. But if we defied them, you know, they'd kill us. And that was pretty much the way that it is. So where it made them stronger in the past, it's making them weak now. Not just Enlil, but all of these Creator God aliens are ready to move on beyond our primitive Earth Homo sapiens. And that's a big part of the reason why disclosure is on its way. And we are all an instrumental part of it. And that's why we experiencers are sticking our necks out to communicate these messages globally, because it is so incredibly important. So, Leslie and Wes, I'm sure you have thoughts on that as well.
Well, first of all, I would just like to say that what you've just been relating to us, there is an awful lot of collaborative information out there. Not that you require that, certainly, but what stands out to me is, obviously, as a hypnotherapist and a regressionist, I do a lot of work with past life regressions. So it is always, I guess, sort of intrigued me that when people have been devoutly fixated in one of, like, say, the big three religions, that when they transition, you know, they move out of their body, they will often have an experience where they are met by Jesus or the Prophet Muhammad or the Buddha, and so people do, in fact, people who are very embedded in a specific belief system will experience that belief system when they transition out of their physical bodies a huge percentage of the time. So again, that's something that is very collaborative with what you were speaking about. And certainly the establishment by Enlil of three religious viewpoints I loved your download about that, and I also have to wonder if it wasn't another kind of a divide and conquer in a way. It's certainly the power of three, but is it a divide and conquer? Because the more time that we spend, futzing about between ourselves on points of theology, especially amongst people who are all Semitic people, we're going to spend a lot less time questioning the bigger picture. Like, why can we not go directly to God's source, which I believe that we can. I believe we do, maybe in meditation. What are your feelings on that, John? Do you think we can bypass this sort of intermediary prayer grid, if you will, that has been put in place by perhaps Enlil and some of the other Anunnaki cohorts?
I don't believe so. And the reason why is because it's part of our contract before we were born. Mm. You know, we have to go through certain life experiences on the 3D earth plane.
Yes.
But that's only the short of it. When we pass, we have to go through many, many different tests and many different initiations, if you will, before we can gain enough spiritual energy to become closer to the real universal God consciousness. And that requires us going through many levels of what I would call pre-heaven before we actually get to the real heaven. And a part of that is what I was saying earlier, is that we worship these alien gods. They create their own version of heaven in the afterlife by design for us to cycle through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of where I was going with,
yes,
they absorb our souls, mm-hmm, but only for a certain period of time, because mm-hmm, it's not their soul to absorb. It belongs to the real universal God consciousness. But because we prayed to them, we're going to cycle through them, whether we want to or not. And actually, it's very much in our better interest, because once we get out of the other side of their heaven, we have grown that much more close to the universal God consciousness. But it's not going to be handed to us. You know, we're not going to die and immediately go become one with God in the universe. We have to go through many subtle levels on our way there. And it's something that I would expect to have to go through, you know, from kindergarten to elementary to middle school to high school to your bachelor's degree, your master's degree to your PhD, something similar to that, before you can be considered a master of the universe and actually join the real universal God consciousness. And then once you cycle through all of those heavens and become one with God in the universe, then you start all over again, right back at the bottom. But you do that on 13 dimensions at the same time. So let's say in this dimension, I am, you know, I'm Reverend John Polk. I'm a human being. I breathe oxygen. I go through carbon dioxide and oxygen cycles. Now let's say in dimension two, I'm Yahweh, and I have a few thousand planets out there, and I'm absorbing prayer energy and souls from all them as a creator God alien. And then in the next dimension, I might be a slave working for Yahweh, mining ores and gold and precious minerals and gems out of the earth. You know, so there's many subtle levels that we have to go through, and we coexist within ourselves, within our higher alien selves. And in the end, it all balances out to an absolute zero. So let's say 100 is at the top, 100 is at the bottom, zero is in the middle. But in the middle is where we can achieve congruency with the universal God consciousness. But once we get all the way to the top, we go back to the bottom again. And once we get to the bottom, we go up to the top again through these 13 different dimensions. And it's hard to understand that we coexist within our own omnipotent soul on all dimensions at the same time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what I try and do, Leslie and Wes, is I try to not remotely view, but actually see through my higher alien self's eyes. For example, I'm on another planet, and I look down at my hand, and my skin is blue, mm-hmm, and I have four fingers. I look at my arm, I don't have any hair on my arm. Then I look up into the sky and I see UFOs flying formation, flying everywhere as if it was traffic on a city street. And then I look up into the heavens and I see three massive moons. And then I look straight ahead of me off at the distance about a mile away, and I see a dome covering a city. And I try and consciously do that. And when I'm on these other planets, living vicariously through my Earth self, through my higher alien self, I try to, you know, breathe the air, feel the ground beneath me, touch my skin. I try to go through all my senses so that I can really feel like I am there. And the more I do it, the easier it is for me to do so. So not only am I living through my Homo sapien existence here on the 3D Earth plane, I'm living simultaneously through my higher alien selves, plural, all at the same time. And I try and stay in communication with them, as I know that they have a vested interest in what happens to me, because whatever I do, whatever I think, feel, my actions, my thoughts, it affects them, and vice versa. Their actions, thoughts, feelings, etc., affect me, since we're all part of the same soul system. Mm-hmm. And then there's many subsets within our soul systems also, and many quantum levels of existence within our own existence. And it gets so deep, it is unbelievable, but I'm trying as hard as I can to live through all of my multiple selves at the same time.
Wow. You know, Wes, I'm sure you certainly could speak to this idea of living through your higher self, your alien self. I believe you've even conveyed to me that you have had some similar experiences to John, where you have really been, for lack of a better term, bilocating. But please speak to that.
So I will say a thank you for something you said earlier, and that was that we, as experiencers, and I am one too, we really do need to take up our tasks and get the message out. And that's one of the things I do and Leslie does, that's part of our mission. But in terms of this multidimensional idea, which Leslie and I feel is a reality, I have found myself in different places, in different worlds, having conversations sometimes with different beings, none of them verbal, looking at different places, facilities, and thinking to myself, okay, I accept this. I accept it's all part of me. I accept that I'm a multidimensional being living simultaneous lives. And Leslie and I have had these discussions many times. And in fact, we asked one of our guests, and it doesn't occur to me who it was at the moment, but we said, can this lead to a problem for us or for me if I try to take in or take on too much? Am I going to destabilize myself? What would you say to that, John?
I think that our gas tank has no bottom to it.
All right.
It's a bottomless void that we can never fill. Although we may feel like we have within our physical container in the three-dimensional earth plane, but in another dimension, we might be only a spiritual existence. And, you know, our God self, which is a metaphysical term I learned in metaphysics, but our God self is our soul. And it is the part of God that he lends to us for this particular incarnation in this particular lifetime. And since God, the real universal God consciousness, is infinite, so are we within our God self. And so we have an infinite amount of storage space. So where it may, and I agree with you completely, Wes, where it does seem overwhelming to try and absorb all this knowledge and all this information, and then once you start to really feel all of your other physical and spiritual selves on multiple dimensions at the same time, it can be completely and totally overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not unusual for my nose to just bleed profusely for no reason. Mm-hmm. And then I have to think, well, it wasn't anything that happened to me here on Earth. It was one of my other selves. Something happened to one of my other selves. And this is the way that my 3D Earth plane container responded to that energy.
How it manifested.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think that within all of ourselves collectively, we're capable of absorbing all the energy in the omniverse, if you will. But it does seem overwhelming, absolutely. Often I'm overwhelmed by the information that I receive, and sometimes it's hard to even believe that it's even real because it's just so profound and the gravity of it.
Still, John, we're willing adapters or adopters, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I willingly embrace everything that's happening to me I embrace my abductions. I embrace all the downloads. Mm-hmm. I embrace losing friends and family over my belief systems. I embrace everything that comes to me, whether it's good, and I don't like to use the opposite of the word good, so whether it's good or less than good, I embrace all of it. I invite it because it's part of my maturation process. And without going through these experiences, I'm not going to be able to get closer to the universal God consciousness. So I embrace all experiences from all dimensions, all of my physical selves, all my spiritual selves, as it's only going to help me to grow and to be able to help not just myself to grow, but to help other people and help other people grow. And just like yourself and Leslie, we're here to teach other people as well. And it's a responsibility that has been placed upon us that we willingly accept and embrace and even perhaps even want more responsibility. I'm sure you would agree with that, at least to some degree.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And John, I was just wondering if you no doubt have explored this, but some of the things that you're saying remind me of some conversations we had with that gentleman from South Africa, the archaeologist who founded the Michael Tellinger, who I think is just a marvelous person. He seems to have a personal, and I don't know if he's ever discussed this, but he seems to have a personal relationship with Enki and Leo's brother. And so some of the things that he's saying or has channeled, some of the information is very analogous to what you are telling me, of course. And I wonder if you think that you yourself, in your soul path, that you may have in fact been on the Terran planet, planet Earth, in the city of Ur, or one of the old cities at the very beginning, and actually either knew or interacted with or was possibly even related to Enlil when he was in physical form here.
Absolutely. I believe that most of us experiencers, especially those of which communicate through mass media, internet, radio, television, that we were and still are, actually, and we are in fact avatars of them. We are the messengers sent here to communicate their messages. So these downloads we receive, well, what's their source? What's the origin? Where does it come from? Does it come from God? Well, yes, but God is using Enki and Enlil and others to communicate to us vicariously. And so, yeah, absolutely. And we are all related.
Yes.
And somewhere along the line, we share similar bloodlines and alien lineages going back tens and even hundreds of thousands of years.
Yes.
So to answer your question, yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
we are all related as experiencers.
I really believe that. And now, you know, science, John, is really pointing to certain anomalous traits that some of our bloods carry in common, a big one being Rh negative. The lack of the rhesus coating on our red blood cells is a big indicator. And there are also certain haplogroups of blood that are older than others. And this is just science. This has nothing to do with metaphysics. This is what we know. And we know that the O blood grouping is the earliest blood grouping. So if you carry it if you manifest it or carry it, then that's a very strong indication that you are carrying some very ancient DNA. And something I just wanted to mention to you before I want to ask you about the experience that you shared with me earlier at the conference. But before we get there, I just wanted to also mention that, of course, this idea of civilization and advanced civilization occurring in the Americas previous to the civilizations of native peoples is a real big hot button right now, because the evidence is coming through fast and furious that there were Cro-Magnon, extremely tall Cro-Magnon beings all over the Americas, who were either stimulating the Mesoamerican cultures or interacting with various people. So this is now, they're finding remains. In fact, in Chile, and this was about a decade ago that this initial discovery happened, that they were blowing up a mountain to build some sort of a tunnel, either for a train or what have you, and a huge cavern. I believe there were 96 mummies in pristine condition, buried in the Egyptian style, you know, in what we would consider an Egyptian style. And the mummies were, a third of them had fiery red hair, another third were blonde, and the other third had auburn hair. And they weren't exceptionally tall, as in the closer beings to Enlil, but they were at least 6+ feet tall, which is huge compared to the Mesoamerican population. Now, when they did DNA tests, and rather even carbon dating, I don't know if the DNA has been conducted, but the carbon dating was. So these beings lived 32 centuries before the oldest of the Old Kingdom Egyptians. So we're talking some very heavy-duty antiquity here. We are talking about beings that walked the earth with Enlil and were no doubt his progeny in some way.
I agree totally. I mean, if you go to the Sumerian kings list, on average, your king would live about 30,000 years.
Yeah.
30,000 years? And then there was a targeted mutation of our genes, supposedly sometime after Noah's flood,
to
reduce the amount of, for lack of a better term, alien genes that we had in our genome.
Yeah.
Plus, we have, you know, 23 chromosomes from our mother, 23 from our father. Well, back in the day, we had 24 and 25 chromosomes. And those extra chromosomes coded mostly for spiritual ability, mental capacity, mm-hmm. and overall intelligence, telepathy, the ability to use your pineal gland, mm-hmm. Self-teleportation, etc.
Yeah.
So they've kind of, you know, another lack of a better term, kind of dumbed us down because they didn't want us to have all of the gifts that they had,
yeah.
and it turned us more of into an infant kind of race, really, to mine the gold. Because if we were that intelligent, we would have probably got our forces and gathered our numbers together and revolted against them, being as intelligent as them. So, you know, Zachariah Sitchin, targeted mutation of our genes.
That's right.
Mixing ET genes with Cro-Magnon man, and it took many, many tries, many, many errors. And finally, they created the human model that we are today, even though we're more evolved than what they created, the Adamu, mm-hmm. where the word Adam from Adam and Eve came from. Adamu means basically a slave species.
Yeah.
So yes, and also what they unearthed in Chile is found all throughout Mesoamerica, North America, mm-hmm. South America, all throughout Europe. Actually, there's evidence of what you said on every single continent. It is being covered up for all the obvious reasons, you know, going back to forbidden archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the powers that be does not want this information to come out. There's too much power in the knowledge and information, and it's a deliberate disinformation act to just keep us, you know, within the last 5 to maybe 10,000 years of historical evolution on this planet.
Indeed. And do you feel, John, that this Christian, Islamic, and Judaic concept of original sin, as in the work of Sitchin, simply refers to a perception of the intermingling of the shall we say the Anunnaki DNA or fluids with the human ova, that was some kind of line that should never have been crossed? Or do you think that this heavy concept, well, I guess it looms heavier, maybe I'm Irish, raised Catholic, the idea of original sin is a concept that is very heavy because it goes into your subconscious and makes you believe that you are born with sin or born imperfect or of the devil. So these are really concepts that completely attack the self-esteem of any being, or even the idea that you could communicate with God directly. What do you think about this original sin concept?
I would agree with you again. So when they recreated the Homo sapiens species, they added some genes. If you look at the double helix and you break it down into its simplest form, you can see some traits within the helix, the double helix, that are obviously placed there. Mm-hmm. That there's no way through natural evolution that they could just naturally evolve and occur. Mm-hmm. For example, HAR1 is one of them, and that's a gene that makes us more human than the chimpanzee, which we are about 2% different genetically than the chimpanzee, 2%. And a big part of it is HAR1. Then there's VMAT2, which is the vesicular monoamine transporter number 2. And then that is actually the God gene that was found by Dr. Dean Hamer back in like 2005. And it was deliberately placed in our genome, within our genetics, so that we would look for a God concept.
Yes, the God spell.
Yes, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And then there's even the Fox gene, which is indicative of our voice box, you know, which also differentiates us from other primates.
Yes, yes. It's a significant thing that differentiates us from primates. Yes, or my own, or any type of ape, for sure.
And Sir Francis Crick, who was supposedly, he wasn't the first one, but supposedly the first one to break down the DNA sequence and be able to start to interpret it, he said that us evolving from apes had the probability of assembling a jumbo jet airplane by sending a tornado through a junkyard. So that's the mathematic probability that we evolved from monkeys.
Yes, it really, I know. And also, that's so funny. Is that hilarious? And, you know, even the archaeological and paleological information is now, you know, supporting this, of course. And I think what we're looking at now is a world that was far more like a kind of a Tolkien world, where there were many Miocene apes, hundreds and hundreds of types of early primates. Mm-hmm. And it says, in the work of Sitchin, it says very clearly that... That Anki and his cohorts observed different tribes or groups of these Miocene apes until he found a group that seemed to register a slightly higher intelligence, but mostly compassion. And that's how the experimentation began, with a certain sect or twig off the simian branch. And gradually these other Miocene apes, of course, became extinct over time, except perhaps some of the larger ones, which I think possibly creatures such as Bigfoot or Yeti may fall into that category, that these are hominids that essentially did not become extinct and date back to before the genetic upgrade for the current Homo sapien.
I would agree once again, and some of the traits that they were looking for in primitive hominids here on Earth was a species that would try to develop feelings for one another instead of just rape another, you know, animals often just rape other animals. There's no consensual sex, they just do it. But they found a species that tried to develop feelings between a male and a female. Also, the use of tools. Use of tools, using stones to, you know, chop bananas off of trees or whatever, and even actually building domiciles for them to sleep in where it rained a lot and other different climates around the world. So there were features that they were looking for, and they found one out of hundreds, perhaps even thousands of different species on Earth, and then mixed genetics with it, and, you know, the experimentation process by, you know, made famous by Zechariah Sitchin's writings also.
Yes, and that makes an awful lot of sense. And John, would you tell us a little bit about or share with us you were recently at this marvelous conference. I believe it was the first one of this organization, and perhaps you'd like to tell us a little bit about that, and also about the unannounced guests that arrived.
Okay, last year, Ray Hernandez, I met him through Meetup, which is an online kind of group where there's meetups for anything. And then this one that I happened to stumble upon was for UFOs and aliens. And anyway, I meet him through Meetup online, and then we eventually open a dialogue by way of telephone. We start talking to each other, and he was pretty fascinated by my theories and my perspectives. And likewise, you know, Ray is one of the most intelligent human beings you'll ever talk to, and I loved him immediately. You can feel his spirit through the phone. He's a beautiful, loving light worker who's just trying to help experiencers around the world. And he convinces me to go up to Experiencer Speak 3 conference, which was last year.
It was the third one.
Founded and organized by Audrey Starborn Hewins, who's a personal friend of mine. And she asked me last year as an attendee if I would be the opening speaker this year on Friday, August 28th. And I was just totally in awe, triple the honor. So, of course, I accepted and said yes. So we're talking, and she said, you know, the reason I picked you is because you're so spiritual, and I want you to create a spiritual tone for the whole weekend. Mm-hmm. She said, talk about whatever you want, but that's the reason I wanted you to open up the whole conference. So I was in awe. I mean, just such an honor to be bestowed upon me. And so I embraced it. And whether she had asked me to be spiritual or not, I was going to write about my spirit. So what I do is the first thing that I say, I explain who I am, my background, and then I say, I'm a channel and I'm a medium, but I'm not special, and I am not unique. We are all capable of receiving information from the other side, and not all of the voices in our head that we hear are actually us. We're often receiving downloads from spirit energetic beings and or extraterrestrials, and we just don't even know it. So I said, ET, believe it or not, is in the room with us right now. But what's happening is they're vibrating at a higher frequency than we can see with the naked human eye. So what I have learned, and I'm still learning how to do it, but I'm also learning how to teach it, is to teach people how to traverse themselves, to raise their vibration to a higher frequency so they can see into these light spectrums and they can actually see in ET that it is in the room with you, because they're always in the same room with us, whether we know it or not. And I said, so beyond that, I have another goal. One of my goals today is for somebody that has never achieved contact on the other side to achieve contact for the first time, and those of us that live on the other side to achieve contact unlike we've never achieved before. And if even one person, if I affect one person's life through my presentation, or let's say through the balance of the entire conference, whether it happens during my speech or anybody's speech, that's my goal. And that's what I want to happen, because I do have this gift. And it's not my gift. A gift like this is nothing that you own. It is given to you as it's on loan for this lifetime, this incarnation, and it is my responsibility that I embrace to teach how to do it, and also to explain to other people that they have this gift too, that I'm not unique and I'm not special. And so anyway, we go then into a guided meditation. Everybody hold hands. Let's clear the room. Let's breathe in the universal God consciousness. Release the lower energy. Breathe in, breathe out. And I say, open your eyes or close your eyes. Whatever you prefer. I prefer to keep my eyes open when I meditate, because I can see through to the other side without closing my eyes. That's the true test for me, is to do it with my eyes open, and I can do it anytime that I really want. So we do the guided meditation, and I'm looking out at everybody, and everybody pretty much had their eyes closed, which was fine. And everybody got into it, and I think everybody kind of lost time for a minute. And then, you know, the conclusion of my speech came around, and I finished with, you know, us experiencers, we need to rise up and speak up and speak out. And I got a nice warm ovation. It made me feel good. And I went and sat down, but nothing really happened until the next day on the full moon, August 29th, Travis Walton is about to make his speech. But first they showed his new documentary, which is simply entitled Travis. And it's brilliant if you haven't seen it. It's about an hour and 45 minutes. It's a brilliant documentary. But right at the very beginning, right before he got started, these four individuals, they walk in and they walk right up to me. I happened to be by the front door, and I did that on purpose because I wanted to have pole position to try and sell my books. But anyway, they walk up to me, they have cash in their hand. Who do we pay to be able to watch Travis? And I'm like, let me find Audrey. So So we find Audrey, and they give Audrey the cash, and then they go sit down. And after the fact, I talked to Audrey about it, and she said, you know what's funny is that they didn't even realize how much money they had in their hands, and they didn't even have enough to get into the conference. But Audrey, you know, at that point, she didn't care, you know. Give money to the cause, fine, let them just come in and they can watch Travis. So we sit down, everybody's watching the video and then listening to Travis do his question and answer period, and it was magnificent. He's just a brilliant orator, and if you can't feel his energy, then you just cannot feel energy, period.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then, so then everything is over, and I decide I'm going to just sit here until every single human being has left the conference area. And what happens? These four individuals walk up to me, and I'm going to describe them as the grandfather, who's probably 65 years old, his son that was probably 35 or 40, the grandson, who was about 6'1", good-looking, probably about 17 years old in appearance, and then this real short guy was bald with sunglasses and a Fu Manchu braided beard, maybe about 5 foot tall. Very curious. But they come up to me, and they start talking to me, and I barely remember anything that they talked about over about a 25-minute period. And I start to look at the grandfather, and it took me probably 10 minutes to really realize that his skin was a bluish gray. And now all of a sudden there's probably 10, 12 people surrounding us. And somebody says, and I tried to say it and I couldn't say it, but somebody said, your skin is blue. And he paused for a moment and he said, I'm a shifter and I'm a healer. And we're like, wow. Everybody's kind of, you know, silenced. Nobody said anything at that point. And then I said, well, where are you from? And he said, I'm from many places. And then some other people started doing some Q&A with this guy. And the other three were really not talking at all. But the grandson at one point, he came up to me and he said, the Anunnaki, the Anunnaki, the Anunnaki, the Anunnaki, the Anunnaki, almost like he was autistic. And I look up at his eyes, and he did not have any color in his eyes. His eyes were two big black saucers. It's very, very strange, almost indicative of star children and their behavior, how they have no color in their eyes, and they only know a few sentences, and they'll repeat them over and over and over and over, kind of dispassionately, almost robotic in fashion. Mm-hmm. And then I went to go ask the guy's name, and I forgot to ask his name. And multiple witnesses who I've talked to after the fact tried to ask his name also, and we all forgot to ask his name. How do you forget to ask somebody their name? And then I'm like, well, I'm going to take a picture of him with my phone. Yeah, I'd taken pictures. I sent you a bunch of pictures of Travis Walton,
yes,
Grant Cameron, and some of the other speakers, and I forgot to take a picture of somebody with blue skin. How do you do that? And then the grandfather, the son, the grandson, and the little Martian dude. So his son, for lack of a better word to describe him, him and his son had the same colored skin. The other two did not. But his son at one point is like, hey, we have to go. And at that point, you could see the grandfather figure. He's getting very comfortable and very loose, and he's answering questions, which most of us don't even remember asking and don't even remember the answers to what the questions were. He did the Jedi mind trick on all of us.
Wow.
Standing there. And at one point during my presentation, I said, raise your hand if you can see ET. Only four people rose their hand. Mm-hmm. And four out of the 10 people that were talking to these guys were there talking to them then. Does that not figure?
Yeah.
And I couldn't even tell you who the other six people were. And I was looking them all right in the face. I'd seen them all weekend long. I couldn't even remember who they are. But I did have the benefit of talking to a couple of them after the fact. And one of them was on a radio show corroborating what I saw on this radio show last night for 2 hours. Mm. And, you know, I've been on spaceships before. I've had grays in my bedroom. I've seen them in my living room. I've been abducted since I was a child, but this had to be the most profound experience on the 3D Earth plane that I had ever had in my life.
Wow.
John, this could
I'm all sweating now just reliving the whole thing again. I'm just sweating profusely. It was so emotional, and I cannot get it out of my mind. Yeah. And after the fact, you start talking to other people, and a guy named Ron, I'll just call him Ron, he said that the grandfather had glasses on. I did not see him have glasses on. And I start talking to other people, and we all saw different things, but we are all in agreement about the core of the story and what happened.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you asked, I'm all breathing heavy. And
wow.
But it was very emotional.
Well, you know, I can feel, I can almost see this through your eyes. I mean, the way, and I mean, you've communicated this to me so visually, so emotionally, that I think many of our listeners are going to have a real understanding of the magnitude of what has happened here, and we're going to have to talk about it even further. And I can hardly believe it, but this hour has literally flown by.
What?
John, I know,
you're
John, you're going to have to you're going to have to promise to come back and visit us again real soon, because we just scratched the merest veneer of what I had hoped to get into today. But it's been an absolutely delightful, thoughtful, mind-opening, uplifting time with you today, and we can't thank you enough. Now, if our listeners would like to order your book either directly from yourself or in an electronic format, what is the best way for them to do that?
johnpolkmedia.com, J-O-H-N. P-O-L-K media.com, and you can order the ebook for $10 or the print version for $15, or you can go to alienoraclescrolls.com, alienoraclescrolls.com, both of which are my websites. Contact me directly, and I just ordered 50 of my books. I can even autograph one to you and ship it to you.
Fantastic.
That is wonderful. And now we have to figure out a way, John, for you to come visit us here in Toronto.
Yeah.
And either conduct a workshop or we have a nascent convention, as I mentioned to you, that we just had the first opening salvo last summer, and that is the Alien Cosmic Expo. Many of your friends, Grant Cameron, participated.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have you join us at Alien Cosmic Expo if you were available. So let's see if we can explore that.
I'd love to, Leslie. I'm so glad that you stumbled into Ray Hernandez somehow, and Ray said you have to get in communication with Leslie, and of course he was right. And I'm so pleased that I just by fate. You know, certain people are placed in your life path, and Ray Hernandez was one, and he has opened so many doors for me. And Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Free Foundation, I'm going to plug it until I cannot plug it anymore. I owe everything to Ray Hernandez and Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Free, and also Audrey Hewins and Starborn Support Experiencer Speak For.
Yes. And all of that information will be up on our Facebook page, and we'll be posting information about John also on our Facebook page, and you'll be able to access any contact with him that you wish. John, Reverend John Polk, thank you again for joining us here on Contact, and we just wish to surround you with light as you go about your amazing work and as we live to see disclosure, and I believe that we all will.
We will, within our lifetime, if not in the next 5 years or less.
Indeed. Thank you so much, John, and we wish you a very good night from Contact, and good night, Wes, as well.
Good night, Leslie, and good night, John. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Contact.